And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd back on the show as we come back from a little bit of a break. We got to catch up on spring stuff. We got Alabama, Georgia spring games happened over the weekend. Michigan is over in Italy. What does that mean for the rest of college football, if anything? And since it's NFL draft week, Dennis Dodd has some stories of players that you probably did not watch on Saturdays. But man, their stories are absolutely incredible. And they are hoping to hear their names called or at least sign an undrafted free agent contract here in the next coming weeks. Make sure that you subscribe to the SEC on CBS podcast so that you can get episodes first and enjoy another Doddcast. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, wrapping up spring, Dennis Dodd on the line. Dennis, how are you doing?
I am good. It's the middle of spring. Actually, it's the end of spring football-wise, I think. There's only a few left, and so we can draw some general conclusions, I think.
Well, once Alabama and Georgia wrap up those spring practices, that's when the final shift. Like, the first shift is always Duke, because David Cutcliffe wants to get them into spring practice as soon as they're done with their bowl game, and he gets them in and out all probably in the month of February. But then the final shift is always Alabama. We've always got Nick Saban in his coat and tie walking around on the field, running clock, barking at everybody. I mean, great blue jacket, pink tie combo. Looked sharp. Looked very sharp.
You noticed that too, have you? That's a spring tradition, seeing him back there. If there's any setting where you probably shouldn't be wearing a suit and tie, it's probably that one. So Nick goes contrarian on us every spring.
Yeah, it's always for the spring game, because we've seen him be out there with the straw hat. You know, he's got the the short sleeves. But this is about 4 years in a row. He looks very, very sharp in his Sunday finest on Saturday afternoon, walking around. I mean, it looks like he's about to take some family out to lunch after the game.
It looks like he just came from church.
Yeah, exactly. all right, so the Nick Saban, great impressions. He looked fantastic. But what, Dennis, did we think about the quarterback competition is the kind of thing that Alabama fans have been used to for the most part? Because with the exception of, A.J. McCarron, since then, I believe this thing has gone into the regular season, not only spring practice, but into the regular season almost every year. Jalen Hurts, the incumbent starter, getting pushed by Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones. There were a lot of fans there, running clock. You were able to get a sack just by tagging. Very, very tough to draw too broad a generalization. But what did you think about the Alabama quarterback battle coming out of spring practice and at the spring game?
Well, I think the pressure on Jalen Hurts is real. I'm not saying he's not going to start. I'm saying that he has to prove that he's going to be the starter, and I think he will, with a new offensive coordinator, with Tagovailoa coming in January and playing well and being there because he does want to compete, doesn't want a red shirt, that, it's kind of an iron sharpens iron thing. This is real. I think they feel comfortable with either guy. Obviously, in the moment, there's more upside with Jalen Hurts because he won an SEC title and chased a national championship in the context of learning how to play the position, which is what he did last year. And he was really good at it, but he's got to have his game refined. I think we all agree with that. Throwing wise, reading defenses, knowing when to take off with those legs, and getting used to a new offensive coordinator. So his path to there is a bit shorter, but he still has to take it. Whereas, Tagovailoa is clearly, got nothing to lose, not expected to play, but gosh darn it, really wants to start, and his family is saying that, and he is saying it. And so I really believe that it's whoever comes out of that, Alabama's going to be better at quarterback, because this is a real competition.
In looking for Brian Daboll takeaways, which, we said on this very podcast that, the fact that we didn't know much about him led us to the eventual conclusion that he was somebody who's going to fall in line with the order of things. And there was something that I saw that, I don't know if it's going to be a Brian Daboll thing. I don't know if this is has to do with the personnel, but you know, Calvin Ridley's still on that roster, and Jerry Jeudy, the freshman wide receiver, looks really, really good. And the one thing that what seemed to be back again in the spring game, you know, this is in the spring game, but man, if Jalen Hurts or Tua Tagovailoa, if either one of them can really bring the deep ball back, you know, those times like when A.J. McCarron was there, when Jake Coker, when they would just be able to get all the attention of an opposing defense because of the running game and then just let loose one of those 50-yard deep passes, there are the wide receivers there to make that happen. And in that spring game, we weren't even seeing the best running backs. Bo Scarborough, Damien Harris, Josh Jacobs, all banged up. You know, I think that whoever comes out of this quarterback battle, given what we've seen from the wide receivers and from the quarterbacks so far, like this Alabama offense is still going to be very, very strong with either player under center.
Oh, they're going to be loaded. What they need to do is rack a tape of Lane Kiffin sprinting down the sidelines with his hands raised whenever they throw one of these passes, so they can just, you know, up wide open. It worked again. You're right. Yeah, I think that's one of the things they are working on with Jalen Hurts, is to perfect that medium to long pass, that he is that threat. In fact, he has to become that threat given what you just said with the weapons they have.
Yeah, and it wasn't there last year. He missed a lot of those long throws last year.
No, you're right. Or guys came back for them and prevented interceptions or knocked them down or caught them. But he wasn't an exact thrower deep down the field.
Right. At Georgia, we've got a decent amount of drama. Kirby Smart has shut things down with the media. They have parted ways with a highly rated recruit who found himself in some legal trouble. Jacob Eason didn't have a great spring game, but the Bulldogs are in this funny spot, and I just pulled this up right now, and you mentioned it, and I was kind of thinking it too. The honeymoon's over with Kirby Smart, huh?
Yeah, it is. You saw it really in the – in the attendance for the spring game they had. Remember, he wanted to sell out, well, whatever, not sell out, but
Will Muschamp, he said his buddy Will Muschamp challenged him. He came on the radio, and he tried to say South Carolina was running their mouth.
Yeah, and they fell 27,000 short of what the crowd was last year. I'm not saying the bloom is off the rose. I'm saying he's not Kirby Smart, the first-time head coach anymore. And Georgia's got to get better. And Jacob Eason, boy, if you put together a list of the top 25 players in the SEC going into the 2017 season, frankly, you'd be hard pressed to put Jacob Eason on there. He's got to get a lot better as a sophomore. Now they've got Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, and they'd be very good at running the ball, and they may even be favored to win the East. I think they will be. But that's almost a curse of death in that division.
Yeah.
It's whoever gets picked doesn't win. So, no, the bloom is not off the rose, but it's time to deliver. Yes, Kirby Smart.
I think I'm really interested to see how this plays, because I think that the onus is going to be on this team going out there and showing one bit of consistency across a 4-5 game period, because, you know, it didn't happen last year, but it also didn't happen before. Like, this has kind of been a Georgia thing for a couple years now, where, you know, there are three games a season where you circle them and you say, these are teams that should win the SEC East. And then, you know, there's three games a season where you circle them and you wonder how they were not able to show any life against Ole Miss and just get blasted into oblivion.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've said this for a while, but, you know, there's more written about Wisconsin and Georgia per capita that shouldn't, in terms of attention, than probably any other program. And I know, you know, Mark Richt obviously won two SEC titles and got teams to the SEC championship game. But Georgia, to me, is a team that fancies itself something more than it really, really is. You know, they've got that national championship in 1980, and that's the standard to achieve because for any team that has won that. But, you know, in any given year, Georgia's certainly not the second best team in the SEC this year. mean, that's a discussion, but it ain't Georgia. So what are we really talking about? And where's Tennessee? Why can't Tennessee win this thing in a year when they don't have 18 returning stars and they don't have Josh Dobbs? But they do have a lot of talent coming up. So no, Georgia, I guess the word is year to year is overvalued in my eyes. There's a lot of attention because of that, but sometimes reality doesn't stick through. So I don't know about Georgia this year.
So while Alabama and Georgia were wrapping up their springs with the spring games, the Michigan Wolverines are globetrotting. They are over in Rome. It has been a trip that we have talked about for a long time, and now it's happening. He's giving Jordans to the Pope. He's getting in trouble for throwing the football. They went to the original Big House, the Coliseum. And it's funny because there's two levels to this. Number one, I am asked, how is that fair? How do you recruit against that? And Dennis, and this is something that I think we seem to share somewhat of an opinion on, but the you're recruiting against Michigan already, right? Like, this isn't like the schools and the fans that are complaining already were behind in the race to Michigan because it's Michigan football. So the fact that there's something going over and above that, like, I think Jim Harbaugh would be on this trip, with or without his football team. And I think that because Michigan football has incredible backing, political connections, which should not be overlooked here, that other schools don't, that they're able to make these things happen.
It's the absolute best thing you can imagine. And to a raft of coaches around the country, it's the absolute worst. I mean, they're steaming about this. Western Kentucky and Texas San Antonio can't send their kids to Rome, Texas, or something like that. So, and maybe that's the point. Look, is it a competitive advantage? Absolutely. But you know what else is a competitive advantage? Michigan Stadium. Jim Harbaugh is a competitive advantage. They're doing it because they can. My point that I made in the column is that, look, let's call it what it is. It's somewhat of a paid vacation. I don't know how these three practices in particular, while you're being distracted and meeting the Pope and throwing footballs in a mall, are going to help you stop JT Barrett on fourth and short. And by the way, how did that go? My point is he's going to have to start beating Michigan State and Ohio State. If this helps get him the five star or the five stars that make a difference, I don't know if we can ever quantify that, then God bless him. But let's not make it any more than it is. It's sort of a fun stunt. They're going to do it again. They're going to go back to Europe, and not unlike Chip, basketball teams, men and women, who take these summer tours and play exhibition games over there. No one seems to care about that. The difference being, this is Michigan football. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, Virginia basketball was in Barcelona this August, and they stunk this year, so it didn't really help them out that much. Brady Hoke got great recruits to Michigan because Michigan is Michigan football. Being Michigan football is a competitive advantage. I love that approach because if Brady Hoke couldn't beat Ohio State, and so he was out, and if Jim Harbaugh keeps racking up these huge international travel bills and keeps not beating Ohio State, at some point, someone's going to step in and someone's going to say, you know what? Why don't we, instead of spending all this time making sure these kids have their, passports and everything set, maybe let's start working on the 8-yard out route.
By the way, Wilton Spate needs to become a much better thrower after losing his best receivers. They need to run the ball better. And none of those questions are going to be asked this week, and maybe they shouldn't, because that's not the story.
Well, because Italy's great, and that's the thing is, you and I have both traveled to Italy before, and it is an unbelievable, intoxicating, beautiful, magical country that should be experienced with an open, clear mind, where you can take in all the history that is all around you at all times.
You just said it. It's once you get there, it's a giant distraction. If you're on vacation, that's what you want. And if you're at Michigan, I don't see how you work against that. Time to practice. Oh, okay. Let me work on my three technique after I've you know, met the Pope and toured a vineyard and looked at 500-year-old medieval ruins. So, no, you're absolutely right. And it's great for the kids. I think I read where some of these kids that are there are going to stay and then just do their study abroad, you know, stay over there, whether it's in Italy or some other European country.
I mean, it is kind of a pain to get over there. If you do, you might as well stay for as long
Absolutely.
As you can. That flight's not fun. All right. While the Michigan team is abroad, another program that came up, we've been talking about Oregon, and you've been writing about Oregon, and Willie Taggart came out. Stu Mandel had a piece on the Ducks with Willie Taggart addressing the hospitalization of his players. He came out and it was interesting. I don't want to dwell too much on this. I found it interesting that he didn't blame the players, but he said, I just think they weren't hydrated and they were trying too hard. But there was also this idea that he is going to represent some kind of Harbaugh-like transformation to Oregon away from flashy uniforms. You know, they're still going to go fast because we saw that from South Florida, but there is definitely a ideological shift going on in Eugene right now. What did you make of it? And where are you at with Oregon right now? A school and a program that really has since things started to get rocky for Helfrich. You know, there haven't been many wins along the way. Like, I don't know where an Oregon fan hangs his or her hat right now when it comes to the football program, at least until they take the field in the fall. You know, what do you think about that look and Taggart's comments?
Yeah, first of all, that's a great story by Stuart Mandel, Fox Sports. That's who wrote it. But what Taggart said, without saying it, very thinly veiled, was that Oregon was soft. He made the comment in the story about how a lot of kids came here because of the uniforms. Whoa, wow, okay. And that combined with 4-8, here's what you get. He said, I thought it was reprehensible that he did blame the rhabdo on the kids and them not hydrating. They tried too hard. I will tell you that in the sports medicine and sports training community, that is absolute heresy. There are reasons these things happen. There's a reason, by the way, they don't happen in 99.9% of the cases. It's a story John Solomon and I did earlier this year that in those cases, when they get this rhabdo, which is overexertion and leads to muscle tissue breakdown, usually kids are worked too much in one area of their body on consecutive days or overworked with an exercise that has nothing to do with football. In other words, they may have done legs on consecutive days when you're not supposed to do that. You know, you're not supposed to do legs on two consecutive days, at least that hard, or upper body, or driven with punitive type drills, which still exist in football, that have nothing to do with winning football games, by the way, in January in T-shirts and shorts. So I thought blaming that and them not hydrating themselves was absolutely ridiculous and shows – really shows he hasn't gotten it yet. You know, there's some question, as we pointed out in the story, whether the strength coach who was in charge of that drill and, you know, oversaw it was even licensed at all between August 2015 and August 2016 per NCAA bylaws. We haven't been able to determine that yet, but we did make that statement in the story. So in that sense, I don't think Willie Taggart gets it. And, yeah, we'll see. I mean, if they're not tough enough, they're going to be tough enough, I guess. I mean, it's kind of an antiquated notion, but I guess that's it.
Is it possible for Oregon and Baylor, where Matt Rhule is also throwing out the I formation, that, like, this is – okay, so let me set this up. I was at a coaching – conference, one of these, like, you know, they bring the college coaches in to lecture to area high school coaches. I was at the Nike Coach of the Year Clinic 2011. So I guess 2011, 2012, like, we are really starting to see everyone else catch on to, well, not necessarily everyone else catch on, but everybody is talking about how to spread them out. And one coach had a great side conversation with me talking about the pendulum and, you know, the way that it swings back and forth. You know, what is it like? Are we starting to see that happen a little bit in college football with, you know, all of a sudden Baylor's going to look different? Oregon's still going to go fast, but Oregon's definitely going to be evolved a little bit with Willie Taggart's own version. You know, he calls it the Gulf Coast offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you make anything of maybe a shift back in the other direction? Maybe like if there was a certain brand of football that was trendy that put Cliff Kingsbury as one of the youngest head coaches in all of college football, that, you know, that is now of an era that we are starting to move out of?
I don't think so yet. I still think the pro set, which is what you're talking about, Baylor, Stanford, used to be Alabama, not anymore, is still the outlier. It is the spread option of 2009, where it's the changeup. It's the one you have to get ready for because it's different. Most teams are running the spread because that's what most high schools are running, and that's what offensively teams are doing. And for better or worse, is the most effective at this point. Let's not forget, we're coming off, you know, consecutive years where we set all-time scoring records nationally.
True. Yeah.
So usually the pro set's not going to get you that way, but it is going to win. See David Shaw at Stanford and see Matt Rhule at Baylor, who, boy, a great guy, but if you wanted to get him uncomfortable before Saturday, ask him about his offense. Well, now we've seen it. It's real. It's not going to be the Art Briles innovative spread. They're going to be physical, and they're going to pound you. All you had to do was look at Temple the last 4 years. That's reality. And maybe that'll be the changeup in the Big 12. I don't know. But that goes all over the place in the Big 12 and elsewhere, because if most teams are running that the spread offense, you've got to recruit against it. That means big, rangy defensive backs and a depth of defensive backs, about six, who can tackle in space. If you don't have those, you're going to get boat raced. So that's another issue to deal with Baylor. But no, I don't think we're seeing the pendulum switch. I still think that offense, the pro set, is the outlier to its advantage. It's Chip Kelly, for lack of a better term, in 2009.
I think that the perfect evolution the other way is not an I form and it's not a pro set. I think the perfect mm-hmm. evolution the other way is close to what you've got at Auburn. Like I think that there's going to be a triple option meets spread to run, because that's like, right, isn't Gus Malzahn's offense carry a lot of option and triple option offense rules?
It carries a lot of RPO concepts. The problem is, since Nick Marshall, they haven't been able to run a real true run pass option offense. They may be able to do it with Jared Stidham, who's very good, but it's not I don't know a difference making runner. They'll run him, but he won't run for 1,000 yards. That offense, and Chip Kelly's at Oregon, what people missed about it is at its base is a power running offense. They just lined up in a different way. Trey Mason going for 300 yards
right.
against Missouri in the SEC title game. LaMichael James, those are the names you remember from those offenses where it's really simple. If you decide to load up in the box, I'm going to do something on the perimeter, either pass or pitch to that side. And if you try to load up the secondary and cover the perimeter, we have the ability to pound you in the middle. And it's a decision on every snap. At its best, that's what Auburn and Oregon's offenses under Chip Kelly were.
Yeah, and if you decide to take the fullback, then Keenan Reynolds is going to pitch it to the outside. When the Chip Kelly at Navy spring practice came up, that's when it all sort of set in place for me. I was like, oh, that's probably the power run of the future is something along those lines, like LaMichael James, Trey Mason, you know, a Navy but spread out just a little bit more.
Yeah, and when you have an elite passer like Marcus Mariota, then you go the other way. You pass a little more. It's a little more balanced. But, you know, I suspect Auburn this year with Cameron Petway, the leading returning rusher in the country, by the way, is going to be pretty physical.
And is Kerryon Johnson back too?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Kerryon Johnson can throw. He's that extra curveball. All right, it is NFL Draft Week. We are recording this Wednesday morning. The NFL Draft will start on Thursday. But Dennis, you've been digging around, and you've got some stories about some players that will not have their names called on Thursday. The other side of the Power Five conference, big name player is a lot of wait. Who is that? Kind of players which will have their names called on day three. Listen, I've been there in Radio City Music Hall running the CBS Sports Draft Tracker, and all of a sudden, Mayville State comes up on the board, and people look to me like the college football guy, and as if I'm supposed to be able to tell Jason LaConfora something about him, and I don't always know the answers right to this. These players surface every single year, and in many cases, we get at least one who is going to be able to not only make an NFL roster, but maybe even, pop up down the line. So what does some of the crop of that group look like right now?
Well, I came onto this story doing the Jeremy Falk story, and he was the kid at Baylor that got kicked off for alleged misconduct and then killed it at a pro day last month, and it may get drafted. But the unifying tide was about five or six players. They all had the same agent. I started talking to him, and he started to tell me the stories of some of his clients this year. And I said, man, where did you get these guys? He said, I didn't go out seeking these guys. Just this year, they all came to me. So you have a situation like Jeremy Falk. You have a LeBeau Cooper, who is a 6 foot 185 corner out of Baton Rouge in New Orleans, who didn't have the foreign language requirement, ended up at JUCO in Eastern Arizona. I didn't even know there was an Eastern Arizona JUCO. Was told his second year, when he showed up for his second year, we had no more scholarship money, and he had no money, period, literally, because he'd lost his wallet, stayed with his girlfriend, got kicked out of the dorm, stayed in a car, got ticketed for trespassing, was jailed for a week, ended up in Thatcher, Arizona, that's where the school is, with a random roommate who then came after him with a sword, cut him, and in the same incident chased him down the street with a bow and arrow, and he literally ran for his life. The cops caught the guy. Anyway, long story short, three schools and a death threat later, he's going to get into a camp. I talked to his agent last night, and the Rams are really interested in signing him. He has stayed throughout whatever it is, 5 or 6 years, and he is at Mayville State, Division II, North Dakota, as a prospect. There's Willie Mays III, no relation, at Tiffin University, who came from a JUCO in San Mateo, gained 34 pounds in the offseason, and is now an elite edge rusher. There is Whitney Richardson, who was homeless in Phoenix, came from the same city as Trent Richardson and Emmett, the Cowboys running back, in Pensacola, Florida, and is now maybe drafted. He's been to two JUCOs and gave up football, Chip, for 2 years, just gave it up to work, came out in 2016, emerged at Lane College in Tennessee, played 10 games, and became the Division II Player of the Year with, dig this, 32.5 tackles for loss and 17.5 sacks in 10 games.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's in a Division II schedule. It's not like how that's not like, and all props to Deshaun Watson, but his 4,000, 1,000 year was in a 15-game season.
Yeah.
And my man, Division II Player of the Year, getting it done in 10 games. This is the other side. This is the other side. The dream of getting to the NFL, the only path is not with promising to sign your life away to that, SEC offensive line coach. It's not him or nothing. It's interesting.
The story is really titled The Island of Misfit Boys. And it's just about all their stories, but yes, and some of these guys, I forgot to mention another. Francis Callan, who is 23 years old, defensive lineman at Georgia Tech, actually played, but has only played football for 5 years, came from London, as a Brit, and now came and played basketball and soccer. Now it's just refining his football talent and may be drafted. So about three of these guys may be drafted at the end, but that's not the point. I think they're all going to get into camps.
Wow. What do you think right now, based on what you've learned from their representatives, their teams, and you know their stories? What do you think the NFL looks if you are not somebody who stands out in college? If you're not somebody who gets invited to the NFL Combine, what does it take to be able to even register on the radar of an NFL personnel department?
Well, we all make fun of the Combine and these drills and these pro days and everything because they're underwear Olympics. I went to Jeremy Falk's pro day. It was in Pittsburgh, Kansas, Pittsburgh State, a little Division II college. There were about 20 players there. But at one point, a coach turned to me and said, "We know why all these scouts are here." And the entire NFL wasn't there. I'd say about 17 to 20 scouts. But it was to see this guy who was this specimen, Jeremy Falk, at 6'305", do a vertical of 31.5, do 33 reps on the bench, which I was told, I read yesterday, I think, was more than anybody did at the Combine. I don't know that for sure. And then was disappointed at 6'305" that he did a 5 flat 40.
Woo!
Oh, yeah. And then at the end, he was the only player that was asked to stay after. And he some scouts gave him the Wonderlic and all this stuff and interviewed him. So it's that type of thing. The other guy I mentioned, LeBeau Cooper, was going to go to a pro day at Louisiana Lafayette, was told because of scheduling conflicts they couldn't do him. So he drove on an empty stomach from Lafayette to Baton Rouge, his high school, about 60 miles, with his agent who had a bag of sweet tarts, and he ate those for nourishment in street shoes, but you know, Nike walking around shoes, Nike tennis shoes, ran that 4.38 40 for three scouts, and they said, "We admire your determination. We know you're on an empty stomach. We know you're tired. It's going to help you." So those things do matter.
Wow, it's cool stuff. Well, that'll be I'll be working Saturday to wrap up the. Hey, Dennis, you know what fans love? Fans love counting up how many players get drafted by each school in conference, so they can shake their fist at each other.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I'll be around on Saturday, tallying those final numbers for a post on CBS Sports. So I look forward to hoping to hear some of those names out there, because that would be very cool for their story to end with an NFL draft selection. Dennis,
you know, real quick, it'll be interesting to see how that conference thing works out, given that, you know, the ACC, I think we both agree, was the best conference last year, and the SEC wasn't second. It may have been third. And they obviously they rule the draft. We know that. It'll be interesting, but go ahead.
But it's been the same count for the most part, for about 5 or 6 years, and the ACC's always been second. That was always – that, to me, was where the ACC needed to make up ground, because the ACC had a large number of players getting into the NFL. They were, you know, they were not recruiting eye-to-eye with the SEC, but they were recruiting pretty well. And there just wasn't the on-field success in between. So once the on-field success in between was raised up a little bit, that's when the conversation changed. And obviously when Florida State and Clemson both claim national championships in a five-year span, then it just sort of changes the general order and feeling across the landscape.
Yeah, they got bigger. They were going to have more pros. But they always, for a period of years, as you mentioned, the ACC in the draft outperformed the perception of ACC football. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. You want to hear something that's funny? The Miami Hurricanes are a big part of that on both sides of the conversation.
Yeah.
Miami Hurricanes are still putting tons of players in the NFL and still don't have that ACC Coastal Division title.
Well, and that's why a lot of fans down there, including my buddy Luke Campbell, you know, are cursing their fortune, cursing Al Golden, And putting pressure on Mark Richt. You know, we're pumping out pros. Why can't we win?
Yep. He is Dennis Dodd. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. Dennis, thank you so much for your time. Great to catch back up, and we will link up here again soon.
All right, Chip. Thank you.